पित्रं व्रजपात्यं च ब्राह्मणं छाता बृहत्तथा वार्ता संशयशालीना शिलोंशा इति वाय गृहे Then this thread ceremony for the twice born was inaugurated, as were the rules to be followed for at least 1 year after acceptance of the Vedas, rules for observing complete abstinence from sex life, vocation in terms of Vedic injunctions, various professional duties in household life, and the method of maintaining a livelihood without anyone's cooperation by picking up rejected grains. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. During student life, brahmacharis were given full instructions about the importance of the human form of life. Thus, the basic education was designed to encourage the student in becoming free from family encumbrances. Only students who were unable to accept such a vow in life were allowed to go home and marry a suitable wife. Otherwise, the student would remain a permanent brahmachari, observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depended on the quality of the student's training. We had the opportunity to meet an avowed brahmachari in the personality of our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj. Such a great soul is called a Naishtika brahmachari. In this chapter from Srimad Bhagavatam, we are studying the narration of Sri Maitreya Rishi to Vidura on the subject of how Lord Brahma was created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how the Lord specifically empowered Brahma as the secondary creator within this particular universe. And step by step, it is explained how the sequence of creation is taking place. Not only what Brahma creates, but also various realizations and experiences that he undergoes in the process of creation. This is the beauty and the glory of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Many people can speculate in many ways of the origin of the universe, the origin of life. However, no one can possibly, with their limited brains, come to a satisfactory, authoritative understanding. There are many theories based on speculation. People find a few artifacts or see a particular phenomena within space, and on that basis they concoct an entire theory, and it is considered to be fact. However, no one knows In fact, no one can know. It is beyond the reach of human calculation. However, the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, he is all-knowing. Vedaham samatitani bharatamanani chajana. He knows past, present, and future. He is the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of everything that exists. Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, the absolute truth, revealing through Shukadeva Goswami's transcendental heart exactly and specifically how the creation takes place, where it takes place, who participates in this art of creation, and most of all, why it's taking place. The scientists, they speculate to explain how it takes place, but they really have no idea why it's taking place. This is actually the most important of all questions. How it's being done is of some importance, but why it has been done, what is its purpose, is all important. Because you can understand the data of the theory, but it will not change the quality of your life unless you are able to comprehend the purpose of it. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead simultaneously manifests the creation and the purpose of it as well. And this is what we are reading today. In the previous verses, we have seen how Brahma has created the Kumaras, he has created Lord Shiva, he has created the great sages and rishis, he has created various species of life, he's created the four Vedas from his four mouths. And it's going on and on and on to describe the essential points that Brahma has created. He's also created the Rakshasas, the demons, some of them even attack to kill him. Very amazing creation. Everything is very highly personalized at every stage. The idea that anything is happening impersonally is simply ignorance of the person behind it. Just like if a small child sees an airplane flying in the sky, the child may think that that airplane is just a big, big airship that's floating in the sky. It doesn't look like anything very personal. Even when adults see an airplane flying, we usually see it in a very impersonal way. We just see something fly, a big piece of metal flying through the sky. But actually, there's a pilot who has so many anxieties and so many desires and so many worries in his life. And there's a co-pilot who's probably thinking, when will the day come when I can be the pilot and adopt all these anxieties and desires in my life? And they're thinking about their wives back home and their children, what are they going to do with them? And then there's the air traffic controller who's saying, watch out, watch out. There's everything about it is happening so personally. There's persons who have made the engine, there's persons that are checking the engine, there's people inside of it, there's people who are serving the people inside of it. When you see an airplane in the sky, what do you think? Do you think of all the people that are involved in that? Or do you just see something flying through the sky? So it is a tendency to see things in a very impersonal, mechanical way. But the Srimad Bhagavatam describes how everything is so highly personalized. For practically every function of your own body, there is a demigod that is authorizing you to close and open your eyes, to move your fingers. Soul is a person that's doing it, and there's demigods who are personally in charge of practically everything that's taking place within this phenomenal existence. In this particular verse, we are reading how Lord Brahma is creating a social culture within this creation by which we can fulfill the purpose of this creation. The purpose is to bring the independent soul who has misused independence to try to enjoy separately from God, to revive our original spiritual consciousness. Material consciousness is to exploit, to enjoy. Spiritual consciousness is to serve and to love. That is the simple difference. In this world, the highest experience that people sing about, talk about, write about, and search for throughout their life is love. But unfortunately, due to the conditionings of our environment, we have adopted a perverted reflection of love. The motive behind our desire to love is to exploit and to enjoy, whereas true love is to serve, to sacrifice, to please the object of the love. We read amongst the great personalities how they did not care for either happiness or distress. They were concerned whether they're pleasing Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed in this way, Ashlisya va padratham tanashtu mama darshanam marmahatam yatata tata vidatatulam patomat prananatastu sa evanapara. Krishna, you can deal with me any way you please. If it pleases you to step on me, then please step on me. If it pleases you to embrace me, I'm here for you to embrace. If it pleases you to make me broken-hearted by neglecting me, then neglect me, my Lord. I am your servant, unconditionally. My existence is not for my enjoyment. My existence is for your enjoyment. That is spiritual love. Ahoyati ki aprati hata, unconditional and unmotivated. But material, everything is conditional and everything is materially motivated by the basic principle, janasya mohoya mahammameti. I am this body, and those things that can give enjoyment to my body are mine. This is exploitation. And this exploitative consciousness is the source of all the sufferings of material existence, because they cause us to forget the real treasure of ecstatic spiritual devotion that is dormant within our hearts. So Brahma created, on behalf of Krishna, a whole society which is based on a foundation of a spiritual culture. Because this is necessary. Brahma created many great sages previously. Marichi, Pulastya Muni, so many great personalities, the four Kumaras, Shankar, Bhagavan. But for the people in general, they cannot be like these sages where just by their own power of intuition and realization, they could sustain the purpose of life. The jivatma needs the support of a society to protect him or her. And therefore, and some very, very special and rare souls can enter into a secluded state and keep one's mind completely fixed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that is only possible after lifetimes of training within a social culture where we come to that point. And actually, a higher principle is when we actually come to that point, then we just want to give that treasure to so many others. As people make spiritual advancement, they become more and more spiritually attached to the association of devotees. It's not that they become detached. The impersonalists, they want to be detached from everything and everyone. Devotees, their goal is not to be detached. Their goal is to be attached. Totally attached to Krishna. Totally attached to his name. Absolutely attached to the association of his devotees. Absolutely attached to his beautiful form in the temple. Our goal is not detachment. Our goal is attachment, complete attachment, unbelievable attachment. Such attachment that if the object of our attachment is away for a moment, it seems like 12 years or more. That is our goal. Hare Krishna. The impersonal philosophers, simply detachment, that is their culmination. They will worship the deity, they will chant the holy names, they will do some seva, but their goal is detachment from everything. But the devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he expressed what we are longing for. My dear Lord Govinda, in your absence a moment is feeling like 12 years or more. And this entire universe is like a dreary void without beholding your beautiful form. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually taught that the ultimate perfection of our spiritual consciousness is love in intense separation from Krishna. That it is even a higher principle than love in union with Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his mood of Sri Radharani, when he was living his last 6 years in Sri Jagannath Puri, exhibited to the world the highest ecstatic realizations that no one can even achieve. We can strive, and ultimately by the mercy of Sri Radha Gopinath, we can experience a infinitesimal tiny little part and parcel of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experienced. But he was so much immersed in vipralamba, separation. And these ecstasies of separation have never been seen by man. It is even a very confidential secret within the Vedas. How he would go on the moonlit night of the Sarat season with his devotees, singing about Krishna, dancing with his devotees in Vrindavan, gopis, and he saw the ocean. And in separation from Krishna, he thought it was Jamuna and jumped in, fell unconscious all night long, was just floating underneath the ocean, sometimes on the surface of the ocean. Who could possibly perform such pastimes of ecstasy, but the Supreme Lord himself. So he taught us the principle of love and separation. And this is humility. If we cultivate our union with Krishna in a neophyte level, it's very dangerous. We can become very proud. In India, so many people, I have seen Krishna. Krishna came to my house today. Krishna talked to me today. Krishna ate my food today. So many people tell about how they have seen Krishna, how they know Krishna, how they talk to Krishna. But the six Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are praying, I am so fallen, I am so insignificant, I am so sinful, Krishna has left me, where is Krishna? Please tell me how. How I can come back to the feet of my Lord. So the spirit of separation is a spirit of utter humility. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in the house, actually he was going to Srivast Thakur's house one day, and some atheistic, materialistic people approached him and were actually criticizing him in their own way. When you become a devotee, especially a preacher, do not think that everyone will respect you and honor you as a great sadhu. Even the Lord himself, when he becomes a preacher, he is criticized and harassed by materialistic people at times. So they came to him and said, oh, Vishwambhar Pandit, we know what you're doing, you're chanting and dancing all night, but let me tell you this, that the Muslim king is coming because he wants to talk to you, because you are creating such a disturbance with your chanting. Lord Chaitanya, he said, oh, that's very good. I want to see him. I don't like to be alone. I studied all these years to be a scholar because I like to talk to people. Let him come, but it's let him join the kirtan. But he doesn't want to come to talk to you. He wants to come to punish you because you're causing such a disturbance. Why don't you just behave like a normal person? Why are you making all this fanciful show of so-called fake devotion? So Lord Chaitanya just walked away. And he came to the house of Srivas. Srivas Thakur greeted him. Lord Chaitanya was in a disturbed state of mind, transcendentally disturbed. So he said, let us start kirtan. They began the kirtan. Gauranga Mahaprabhu danced. And he stopped the kirtan. He said, I am not feeling any love of God today in this kirtan. My heart is not experienced but bhakti. Why is this? Again the kirtan began. Again Lord Chaitanya started to dance. After some time he stopped the kirtan. He said, I am so unfortunate. I am so sinful. I cannot taste the nectar of the holy name. I am experiencing no love of God in my heart. What is happening? Advaitacharya was in a very jolly mood that day. He said, oh my Lord, I can tell you what's happening. You are not experiencing love of God because I have drunk it all myself. I have taken it from you and drunk it myself. He says, you will not give it to me, so I have to take it myself. You give it to avadutas like Nityananda Prabhu. You give it to the most fallen. You give it to the most sinful. You give it to the most degraded people freely, but you will not give it to me or Srivas. The reason is, Lord Chaitanya accepted these other devotees as his servants. However, Advaita and Srivas were older than him. They were senior Vaishnavas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very careful to teach proper Vaishnava etiquette. So he always honored them, worshipped them, offered all respect to them, and was always eager to serve them. Now a devotee does not want to be honored, does not want to be respected, does not want to worship. A devotee simply wants to serve. So Advaitacharya and Srivas were very, very disturbed. Because Lord Chaitanya would always honor them and never allow them to personally serve him. Unless he went into some trance where he forgot, not forgot, but he was not in external awareness of who they were. Then they would do it. Advaitacharya was like this many times. Another time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would never allow Advaitacharya to touch his feet. But one time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell unconscious in Kirtan and Advaitacharya just went right to his feet and completely covered his entire body with the dust from Lord Chaitanya's feet. Then Lord Chaitanya came out of his ecstatic trance and he started the kirtan, and again he didn't feel any ecstasy. So he asked in a very grave voice, "Did anyone touch my feet?" The devotees were very afraid of Advaita because he was the senior most Vaishnav in the assembly. And they didn't want to tell on him. At the same time, they understood they can't lie to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they were in a terrible dilemma. Advaitacharya saw this and he said, "My Lord, if a thief wants to steal something from someone, they will wait for the moment when that person is sleeping and is not aware. So similarly, you will never give the dust of your feet to me. Rather, you try to take the dust of my feet. This is not good. So you cannot blame me. The treasured object of all my goal of life I have achieved today. If you will not give it willingly, I have to get it by some other means." Then Lord Chaitanya went to get Advaitacharya's dust from his feet. And Lord Chaitanya he is sometimes called Singha Chaitanya, because he's like a lion. And he took the dust of Advaita's feet all over his body. And then he was very happy. So Advaitacharya always wanted to be in the position of servant. And he considered it a curse that he was a Brahmin. Curse that he was a senior Vaishnav. He wanted the position of the people on the street, because they were getting the opportunity to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But I'm being honored. He will not allow me to serve. So sometimes in our contaminated state of consciousness, Hare Krishna, we are desiring some high position, a position of respect. But the great souls, they don't like these things. Simply a disturbance. As a sacrifice for the purpose of preaching on behalf of Guru and Gauranga, we accept a position like this because it may be conducive to helping others become Krishna consciousness. It's an asset to our service. However, within the heart of hearts, it's a disturbance. Because a devotee wants to take the humblest, most menial position of serving everyone. So Advaitacharya was the highest Brahmin and the highest Vaishnav. But he was thinking, I am so unfortunate. The avadutas, the sinful beggars, the materialists, the atheists, they are given the right to serve you, but I am not. And in giving the right to serve you are giving them love of God, but Srivas and myself, we are being deprived of it. Therefore, I have personally drunk that love of God from you. I've stolen it. I've taken it away from you. And that's why you're not feeling any ecstasy. He was joking. But you know what Lord Chaitanya did? He became very grave. He ran to the door and broke the door down and ran outside. The devotees were fearful. Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu went running after him. The others were shocked. What did we do? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just ran right to the Ganges, dove in the Ganges, went underwater and fell unconscious. Haridas Thakur and Sri Nityananda Prabhu were shocked in a state of utter depression. They immediately dove into the Ganges. Haridas Thakur took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his feet, and Nityananda Prabhu took him by the upper part of his body, and somehow or other they struggled and strained to bring him out of the water onto the bank of the holy river Ganga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, why have you done this? Why have you taken me out of the Ganga? Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas, they replied, my Lord, why did you try to take your own life? What is the meaning of this? Why you attempted to kill your body? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, because if in this life I have no love of God, there is no love for Krishna, then what is the use of keeping this body? If I had love of Krishna, how could I bear separation from Krishna? The fact that I'm still living means I have no love of Krishna. There is no purpose to maintaining this wretched body if there is no love of Krishna within it. Why have you done this? Why are you trying to preserve this wretched body? Nityananda Prabhu, this was his mood. Because he met those materialistic people, he felt that just by their association, he was deprived of love of Krishna, and he wanted to give up his life, because there's no reason to live without love of Krishna. Nityananda Prabhu said, my Lord, the very person that you're punishing, Advaitacharya, is the very person who brought you to this world. But he was thinking, I am so unfortunate. The avadutas, the sinful beggars, the materialists, the atheists, they are given the right to serve you, but I am not. And in giving the right to serve you are giving them love of God, but Srivas and myself, we are being deprived of it. Therefore, I have personally drunk that love of God from you. I've stolen it. I've taken it away from you. And that's why you're not feeling any ecstasy. He was joking. But you know what Lord Chaitanya did? He became very grave. He ran to the door and broke the door down and ran outside. The devotees were fearful. Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu went running after him. The others were shocked. What did we do? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just ran right to the Ganges, dove in the Ganges, went underwater and fell unconscious. Haridas Thakur and Sri Nityananda Prabhu were shocked, in a state of utter depression. They immediately dove into the Ganges. Haridas Thakur took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his feet, and Nityananda Prabhu took him by the upper part of his body, and somehow or other they struggled and strained to bring him out of the water onto the bank of the holy river Ganga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, "Why have you done this? Why have you taken me out of the Ganga?" Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas, they replied, "My Lord, why did you try to take your own life? What is the meaning of this? Why you attempted to kill your body?" Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Because if in this life I have no love of God, there is no love for Krishna, then what is the use of keeping this body?" If I had love of Krishna, how could I bear separation from Krishna? The fact that I'm still living means I have no love of Krishna. There is no purpose to maintaining this wretched body if there is no love of Krishna within it. Why have you done this? Why are you trying to preserve this wretched body? Nityananda Prabhu, this was his mood. Because he met those materialistic people, he felt that just by their association, he was deprived of love of Krishna, and he wanted to give up his life, because there's no reason to live without love of Krishna. Nityananda Prabhu said, "My Lord, the very person that you're punishing, Advaitacharya, is the very person who brought you to this world. You are the only hope and the only life of his life." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, "I am going somewhere. You do not say anything to anyone about what you have seen or where I am. If you do, just wait and see what I do then." Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas were in great fear. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Nandan Acharya's house. Nandan Acharya worshipped Lord Chaitanya with so much love and devotion. And they, all night long, they just spoke about the pastimes and teachings of Lord Krishna. At the end of the night, he told Nandan Acharya, "Please get Srivas Thakur." He ran to get Srivas Thakur. Lord Srivas was so happy. He said, "Please tell me, how are all the devotees? And how is Advaitacharya?" He said, "How are all the devotees? The way you left the house, nobody knew where you were. We didn't know whether you were alive or dead. All the devotees, they cannot sleep, they cannot eat. They are just weeping and crying, totally in depressed and separation from you. And Advaitacharya is simply immersed in an ocean of lamentation. He's been fasting. He feels he has made such an offense to you. Please appear before him and save his life." Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Advaitacharya, where he was fasting, immersed in an ocean of lamentation that he had displeased the Lord. And when Lord Chaitanya saw him, Advaitacharya could not even look at the Lord. He was so ashamed that in his joking way he had offended and displeased the Lord. Lord Chaitanya said, "Sometimes the ministers of the king, who are very dear and confidential to the king, if they make a mistake, the king punishes them to teach them properly? When Advaitacharya heard this, he became filled with bliss. That means you have accepted me as your servant. You have punished me in this way means that you have accepted me as a servant. Then he became blissful, started dancing, offering prayers to the Lord. So anyways, to get back to the subject of this class, the purpose of life is to achieve love of Krishna. And the only means by which we can achieve love of Krishna is by being the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. So a devotee's ultimate goal of life is to become attached to Krishna. And what is detachment? What is its purpose? Detachment is only a means of becoming attached. It is not the goal. That is a fundamental difference between personalism and impersonalism. Impersonalism, you detach yourself so you can be completely detached forever. And Vaishnavism is you become detached from the things of this world only so that you can become completely, absolutely, forever attached to Krishna and those things in relationship to Krishna. So we are only concerned with detachment to the degree it helps us become attached to Krishna. Therefore, the Vaishnav school does not recommend artificial types of renunciation or austerity, because sometimes those things can make you hard-hearted and you become detached from Vaishnavas. You become detached from the loving service of the Lord. Attachment comes to the degree your heart becomes soft. Therefore, we have to be very careful that when we are practicing detachment, it is under the proper guidance that it actually brings a softening of the heart and a attachment growing and growing and growing for Krishna's devotees, Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's message, Krishna's beautiful form, Krishna's holy dham. You want to be attached to these things. It is simultaneous. To the degree we become attached to Krishna, we become genuinely detached from the pleasures of this world. And to the degree we become detached from the pleasures of the world, to that degree we can actually repose our attachment in Krishna. Otherwise our mind is many-branched. We have so many obstacles standing before the path of complete attachment to the Lord. So the whole purpose of society is detachment from enjoyment and attachment to humble service. And therefore, Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, along with this creation, through the Creator, manifested within this world the various processes by which we can purify our hearts and make spiritual advancement. Therefore, Lord Brahma created the thread ceremony for the twice born. Very, very important. The twice-born, or Brahmins, are meant to be leading society on the path of truth and realization. A society without trained and qualified Brahmins is like a body without a head. It can give no proper direction. And without that direction, there can be no possibility of peace or progress in the pursuit of human existence. And he created the rules to be followed for 1 year after acceptance of the Vedas, the rules for celibacy. He created the vocations in terms of the Vedic injunctions and the various professional duties of a householder. He created the renounced order, the householder life. He created the Varnashram system by which everyone living together as a society has particular duties to be performed for the purpose of detaching ourselves from those things that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness and attaching ourselves to those things that are favorable for Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada explains in this very wonderful purport that human life is meant for renunciation of material enjoyment. Therefore, at the beginning of one's life, one is ideally to be trained as a student brahmachari, where one really becomes situated in one's life on the foundation of not giving in to the desires and the demands of the minds and the senses. From the very beginning, approximately 5 years old, we're taught how to say no to the mind and the senses. And then Srila Prabhupada explains, if one is, thus the basic education was designed to encourage the student in becoming free from family encumbrances. Does anyone know what an encumbrance is? Huh? Encumbrance, in the context that Prabhupada says it, you can know what it means even if you do not know what the word means. It means, essentially, the hardships, the struggles, and the bondage. Now, if one is trained properly and one enters into grihastha life, one is not so much bound by these encumbrances. If Krishna is in the center, if there's proper association, if there's proper sadhana, then we can transcend the encumbrances that are around us. On the physical level, grihastha life, there will be so many encumbrances, there will be so many hardships. Just the chemistry of a man living with a woman, it's a very difficult situation. I'm sure many of you know much better than me. We are theoretical, but I'm sure there's much practical experience. For a woman to live with a man, for a man to live with a woman, at the beginning it's always very nice. It's what we long to achieve. We were made for each other. This marriage was made in heaven. Sometimes for weeks or months or years, we're just waiting for that opportunity when we can just be together without all of these restrictions. And then we're together, and it's, oh, how wonderful. But after a few weeks, we start wondering. We start to wonder about whether it's actually wonderful or... Is it wonderful or is it wonderless? We're wondering. And then after some months, then we somehow or other try to keep that initial joy alive. And after some years, we realize that we have to tolerate each other the rest of our lives. evil. And then you start having children. And when the child's born, the father's giving out prasad to everyone to celebrate, and everyone's saying congratulations, and the father's holding the little baby, and I am the proud father. Just see this little beauty. This is the most beautiful child I've ever seen in my whole life. Very well. He's made out of me. He looks just like Krishna. Not only does he look like Krishna, but when he talks, I can understand. He's saying Prabhupada, he's saying Krishna. To everyone else, he's saying blah, 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 blah. So we become very attached. But then all of a sudden, the child starts crying all night. Please, let me sleep, let me sleep, go to sleep. You can't give it a sleeping pill, you can't beat it, you just have to tolerate it. The mother is just, what do I do, what do I do? And the father says, well, you're the mother, you do something. Maybe they need a doctor, maybe you need a doctor. I need a doctor. Everybody. Then it's anxiety, it's encumbrance. And then they start passing stool and urine. You take it to the temple, it's in the middle of a nice class, and all of a sudden, very difficult. And then you realize that we need so many things to maintain this child, and the wife has to work so hard. She has to wash the clothes, and she has to clean the house, and she has to cook, even the son in the heat of the summer. And the father has to go out and make so much money just to survive. And then there's so many social obligations. When you're married, then all your relatives expect you will come to your second cousin's, third cousin's, cousin's wedding, won't you? You have to. Otherwise the whole family will be disgraced if you don't come. And you can't dress like a grihastha when you come to this marriage. You have to dress like a respectable person. You just have to go, and all these people are doing all sorts of things. So many encumbrances. However, if you're chanting your 16 rounds sincerely every day, the husband and the wife, if you're worshiping the deity or coming to the temple and worshiping the deity, if you're associating with nice devotees, then even though these encumbrances which are there for everyone and anyone in household life, it actually, you transcend it. It all becomes Krishnaized, spiritualized. How is it? Thakur Bhakti Vinod, he had a wife and 10 children. Don't think he was without encumbrances. He had to raise all those children. Sometimes they were sick, sometimes they were doing not so well in their studies. This is a big problem, a big encumbrance to the Indian parents. Studies. What will happen to my children if they don't do well in their studies? And usually they don't. In order to get them to do it, you have to force them, you have to push them, you have to preach to them. And ultimately, even though that little spirit soul came out of your body, he or she has their own false ego, which is separate from yours. You cannot control. And then you become very angry when they're not doing things properly. Anyways, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a wife, 10 children, house. He had to work. But he said when he came home to his house, what did he see? He saw his entire house transform into Goloka Vrindavan. How many of our grihasthas, when they come home, do they see their home transformed into Goloka Vrindavan? You could, you should, you will. Maybe you already do. When Krishna's in the center, then those encumbrances are no longer obstacles. But rather those encumbrances become your service. Everything you do is for Krishna. Everything you do is to help your family become Krishna conscious. Whether you are wife, whether you are husband, whether you are children. So Prabhupada explains here that the purpose of basic education is to encourage the student to become free from family encumbrances. Some people will be free from family encumbrances by not getting married very well. But then you have ashram encumbrances. You cannot escape encumbrances. Then you're sleeping on the floor and the brahmachari next to you is snoring too loud. How am I survive? Where am I going to go? Or sometimes you just don't get along with your godbrothers. One of them moves his eyebrow in a way that I cannot tolerate. How will I go on for the rest of my life with this eyebrow moving? Little things the ego can pick up on and cause us so much disturbance in our mind. So life is full of encumbrances. Whatever you do. But we should understand that by Krishna consciousness, by strong sadhana, by proper training, Prabhupada explains, we can pursue and fulfill the real goal and purpose of life. Prabhupada says, otherwise the student would remain a permanent brahmachari, observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depended on the quality of the student's training. What does brahmachari mean? Real brahmachari doesn't mean you're not married. A real brahmachari is one who is very, very carefully trained in the principles of Krishna consciousness in that ashram. Similarly, a real grihastha is a person who is very carefully trained in the system of that ashram. And if you're properly trained as a brahmachari or properly trained as a grihastha, then at a certain stage of your life, it will be natural to be properly trained as a sannyasi, perhaps, if that is the desire of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada emphasizes very carefully the necessity of quality spiritual training. And really, that is the very essence of Varnashram Dharma. Whether one is a Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyas, everyone requires very careful, high-quality spiritual training. If they want to make spiritual progress according to their vocational or spiritual order of life. Srila Prabhupada was very much concerned that that quality spiritual training be inaugurated within our movement so that we can all make the very, very best of our lives in Krishna consciousness. To create such a society, such a culture where people are genuinely humble servants surrender to the will of the Lord, whether they be men or women, young or old, according to their guna or karma, whatever their occupation or whatever their status of life may be. We should all be united in a spirit of devotion and service. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Dasa 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 Anudas. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya, he exclaimed, I am not Brahman Chachya Vaishishudra Vanaprasa or Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprasa Nyas. Yasta. I am servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. So what does quality training mean? That whatever your particular status is in society, occupational or spiritual, to be detached from any other conception except to be the humble servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. If we do not come to that conclusion, then all of our fanciful ideas of varnashram have failed. And if we, and we cannot come to that conclusion unless we are being given and we are giving that quality spiritual training that Srila Prabhupada is so nicely describing in this purport. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, I have two questions. One is regarding Varnashrama. Earlier, when there was one manifest in the Dwapar Yuga and other yugas, the guru would be actually telling each and every person in his gurukul what ashram he should take. He would tell that you seem to be more like a kshatriya, so he would allow him to take kshatriya training. Some would be guided into Brahman training, others into different training, like that. But since the guru system is absent, what I see is that in ISKCON we are allowing devotees to take whatever occupation suits their mentality automatically. It appears that they just, somebody is a doctor, somebody is a lawyer, somebody is a student, somebody is a professional, somebody is whatever. And we are not necessarily training people to do what they should do in what occupations, but we are just primarily training them to be Krishna conscious in that situation and adopt the philosophy of Krishna consciousness very seriously. So it's in one sense a little bit different than what was going on earlier. Is that understanding of my right?
Partially. It is not necessarily that the guru tells you everything you're supposed to do in your occupational life. But that according to your inclination, you may choose, and then you are trained how to do it properly in Krishna consciousness. In Kali Yuga, especially in a city arrangement, the pure conception of varnashram is very difficult to implement. However, if we see that a person is very much due to social pressures, pursuing something against their nature, then that can be pointed out, obviously, and given direction. It's like we have seen innocent, humble young ladies who, due to social pressures, they're being pushed into studying advanced physiochemistry.
Whatever that is.
They have no inclination. They'll find no happiness in that. They're in tremendous anxiety studying for it. In America, you find young people. Most, Prabhupada said, most of the youth of America should be in the fields plowing with oxen. But instead they're going to medical college and legal college and scientific college, and they're beating their heads against books for PhDs, and then they come out and they have the qualities of someone who should be in the field, but they have big, big degrees, and they're trying to imitate something that they're not. So this forced over-education is a Western creation that's actually harming the world. Everyone should get basic education, but not everyone requires so much high-level education. Here in India, it has been very much adopted. Parents send their girls to schools to get their degrees and their master's degrees just so that they'll get a good husband from the proper caste. But the poor girl, she's acting sometimes and living for years and years in a way that's so foreign to their very nature. Creates a terrible emotional situation in their life. So therefore, we, not only the guru, but senior Vaishnavas, our counselors, can basically understand to a certain extent, you know, what a person's nature is and where they, particular way they could best serve. In previous ages, it was completely obvious. In this age, conditioning, we're conditioned to be what we're not. So it takes some sensitivity. Therefore, we should all try to encourage and guide people that whatever they're doing, they should do it in Krishna consciousness. We should try to guide people according to their natures to engage in particular type of life in Krishna consciousness. That's all. Yes.
In the initial part of your lecture, you talked about difference between love and as apparent there is exploitation. So there is also a conception in the world of love in such a way, in the name of care, in the name of love, in the name of brotherhood, spiritual care. But it is not so much where you incorporate the concept of God in that particular when you show that love. It is just showing so much of love and that. Emotional thing is there, very much there, of care and concern, brotherhood and help, like that. But it is detached from the conception of a personalized God. Would that be called as love? Or could that be put in the label of spiritual care? When people give that sort of love, and recommend that sort of love, and train people in this particular field, they put it in the garb of spiritual care. That's what they say, this is spiritual care.
Without the recognition of God?
Without the understanding of a personalized God. Is it really spiritual care? Can there be spiritual care without God, God's concept?
Can there be spiritual care without God?
Yes.
Hare Krishna. What you are talking about is material affection. The love of this world without God is material affection. When Krishna is in the center, then it is directed toward real love. We may call it love, but according to our definition is not love at all. Our definition of love is the unconditional, unmotivated expression of the eternal soul toward God. That type of affection. If it is based in knowledge. If there is no God, it is avidya, it is ignorance. We're not this body, we're not this mind, but we are loving a body and mind. Therefore it is not real. Something that is not real cannot be real love. It is maya, illusion. So material affection cannot liberate one from the suffering condition of life. However, material affection should be spiritualized. The tendency in Kali Yuga is extremes. Some people are completely immersed in the material affection for each other's bodies, even in the mode of goodness, to be very kind, to be very nice, to be very loving and affectionate and respectful and caring toward another. That's the mode of goodness. But it's still based in ignorance. And then the devotees, they understand that this is all sentimental because they're not Krishna conscious. So therefore they try to love Krishna. And in the process of trying to love Krishna, they don't see any real value at all to be affectionate toward anybody else. Become impersonal, uncaring. Somebody needs help. Maya, what do I care? I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. Somebody needs care. I'm going to go worship the deity. I'm Krishna conscious. So that's another extreme. That's called impersonalism in the name of personalism. So material affection should not be given up. It should be spiritualized. In this material world, a father or mother that it's in the mode of goodness is so affectionate to their child. In the mode of passion and ignorance, they may not have time for their child and they may hate their child. But in the mode of goodness, a mother and a father are so affectionate and attached to a certain type of love that they call to their child. So what is a devotee? A devotee Krishnaizes that. A devotee doesn't become detached from their child's welfare. A devotee is at least as much caring as a materialist in a mode of goodness, but with Krishna in the center, with knowledge, not giving the child things that's going to ruin the child's consciousness. You understand? So we have to know the balance. How to have affection with Krishna in the center. It is wrong to think we can put Krishna in the center without affection in personal interrelationships. And it is wrong to think we can have loving personal relationships without Krishna in the center. Sometimes devotees, they think they're very advanced when they're callous, cold, and impersonal. That's a very, very neophyte state of consciousness. Most devotees go through that when they first become devotees. But as they grow up, they realize that they are simply neophytes. They should care about people on every level with Krishna in the center. Yes, another question?
Maharaj, here in the purport, Prabhupada says that which ashram a person takes depends on the quality of training a student gets. But Maharaj, we have seen that a brahmachari, if he is preaching to a group of students, all students get the same kind of training, but some turn up to be brahmachari, some turn up to be grihasthas. Some students, all the students that have got training from the same person, some of the students turn out to be brahmacharis, some grihasthas. Mm-hmm. So we've heard that means we cannot make a brahmachari or a grihastha if they are born brahmacharis or grihasthas. But here Prabhupada says it's a matter of quality of training given. So seems to be a contradiction.
It says, only students who are unable to accept such a vow in life were allowed to go home and marry a suitable wife. Otherwise, the student would remain a permanent brahmachari, observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depended on the quality of the student's training. We had the opportunity to meet an avowed brahmachari in the personality of our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Shri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj. Such a great soul is called a Naistika Brahmachari. So you're asking why some people take one path and some people take another, although they're given the same training by the same person.
Yes, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. That is because no two people are alike. Everyone has their own nature, their own guna, their own karma, and everyone has their own motivations and levels of sincerity. So there'll be, in the brahmachari ashram, everyone's being trained the same, but people are going to be, some are going to become grihasthas, some are going to remain brahmacharis. Some are going to bloop. There you go. So that training is giving everyone the most perfect opportunity to be the best they can be wherever they go in their life. If a brahmachari is trained very well, then if that person wants to take grihastha ashram, he becomes very, very first-class, self-controlled, Krishna-centered grihastha. If that brahmachari remains a brahmachari, he's a real brahmachari, a real Vaishnava, a real servant of the servant. Trinadapi sunichena. So quality training means you become, that person will become as first-class as possible. Doesn't mean everybody was the same. Does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Very well. No two people are the same. Even in our ashram, Sanat Kumar and Govinda have had the exact same training. There's a world of difference between them. Srinivas and Govinda have the exact same training. They had the same training all their lives at home as brothers. They've had their same training in the ashram as god brothers. And have you met two different types of people like this? But they're both first-class, wonderful devotees. And then we have Sankirtan and Krishnananda. Sankirtan Prabhu and Krishnananda Prabhu. Same training. Who would ever know? They're both first-class, wonderful Vaishnavas. But according to their nature, according to their inclinations, They express that devotion of being the servant of the servant of the servant in their own very unique, transcendentally personalized way. And then we have Vrindavan Kishore and Vrindavan Ananda. Huh? Both grew up in the same house together, trained the same in the ashram. One's a grihastha, one's a brahmachari. But they're both very nice and sincere devotees. The most important thing is everyone is very much attached to serving Krishna and his devotees, and everyone is very attached to chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you very much.